We'll kick in right away. The first order of business is the approval of the meeting, previous committee meetings for the Finance Committee, which have already been distributed. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Okay. Commissioner Dan Preakin, first and second by Commissioner Parker. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, motion carries. Did I say that loud enough for our two? Good. committee item number one, report on pilot projects to promote outdoor recreation. Mr. Scott Bora, please. Bora's bottom group.
He's not the ones that really know.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, for the record, my name is Scott Borup. I'm the Deputy Executive Director for Operations. In fact, Mr. Cook's comment is right on. This briefing is at the request of Mr. Montgomery. Commissioner Montgomery, who somewhat over a year ago asked us to explore some kind of mechanism to put hunters and landowners together via the Internet in some kind of process. And since then, Mr. Friedman has become interested, and the two of this gentleman asked me last month to do this briefing and to showcase some of our talent. So I'm going to do the briefing and the talent is surrounding me, and we will introduce these ladies as we move forward, then they can give you some more detailed information. This project primarily is to provide additional opportunities to folks in Texas for all kinds of outdoor recreation. And before I get started here, I'm going to say that this started really as an effort to put together hunters and landowners, but as we explored that mechanism and we started talking about some of the other projects that we were doing at the time, we were doing a paddling trails initiative around the state, trying to put together paddling adventures for different communities. We kind of realized that we should broaden the scope of what we were doing and put together an online directory of all kinds of outdoor recreational opportunities. Clearly around Texas, urban growth has caused some of particularly the younger population to become more out of touch with the outdoor recreational opportunities. And on the flip side, a lot of folks who provide recreational opportunities around the state, outfitters and those kind of folks, many of them are small organizations, small businesses that don't have large marketing budgets and therefore cannot effectively reach out to their constituents to connect them. So, once again, our purpose here is to try to create a program that would make it easier for folks to find these recreational opportunities. Just some basic statistics, 37% of the population uses the Internet for travel planning. And 52% of travelers that are planning their own travel use the Internet to do that kind of planning. So the Internet was one of the things we were looking to try to leverage in terms of this program. Just so you'll know, and especially for the new commissioners, we have a website now called Experience Texas. It's organized by activities, including hunting and biking and camping and those kind of things, so you can go in there. It has a wide variety of information that we provide in terms of how-to guides and opportunities that are available in our public properties. You probably can't see this real well, but this is the page on the Internet where you can go in right now and click on all different kinds of recreational outdoor opportunities. So this is the format that we started with. Our goal then was to expand this Experience Texas and develop under that umbrella an online resources program that would incorporate user-friendly searchable databases to make it easy for people to find outdoor recreational opportunities. We wanted to have a place where folks could go in and whatever their interest, they could click on it, search it by region or those kind of things. We originally populated this database with information available in existing programs like our Great Texas Wildlife Trails, our paddling trails, equestrian trails, and off-road biking. We already have those kinds of information available. Folks will be able to search by activity, by county, or by region as they plan their recreational travel. And it would provide a free service to nature tourism providers and offer a free public service to our constituents. As I started off saying, this one of the things we were looking at originally was what we call Hunt Texas Online. This is an effort to offer web-based applications to help connect hunters with landowners who have hunting leases, of course. Under this model, which we are piloting, interested landowners would populate a secure database. One of the concerns, of course, with landowners is privacy. We were very careful to maintain privacy in this database. Once again, folks could search by game type, deer, quail, whatever, county, lease type, and other attributes. Would be free to both landowners and hunters, and offers a public service to constituents. One of the key elements here was marketing. How were we going to get the word out to folks that this was what we had, that this was available? So we brought in the marketing division. One of the things we're particularly proud of is that this is a multi-divisional effort to span at least four and possibly five divisions when we're finished. Marketing through the communications division would be very important to us. And as you can see here, we're looking at linking this to other opportunities on travel text and other websites. We would promote it in our different kinds of media that we have available in the agency. And it, our intent is to promote Texas Hunt online by promoting it to landowners beginning next month in September. So we will go out and start facilitating landowners being able to put their information into the system. And then in the spring of 08, we would kind of open the program up and target it with press releases and so forth. We have several desired outcomes. One is to increase conservation dollars, to get people more connected to the outdoors, and ultimately that would reflect in license sales and other kinds of revenue to the agency. It will give, in particular, rural communities a real economic opportunity to develop ecotourism in their neck of the woods and get folks out there and benefit from what they have to offer. It will create strong partnerships in nature-based tourism, and obviously ultimately increase the support for Texas Parks and Wildlife programs. Having said that, I'd certainly be willing to take questions, but one of the reasons I've got the real talent up here with me is so each of these folks could talk a little bit about the programs they've been involved in. And we've got several folks here, and so start over here, Shelley Plan in the Wildlife Division is our nature tourism coordinator for the agency. And so she has been gracious enough to accept the offer to lead this program. Melissa Parker, right next to me with the Inland Fisheries Division, was really the person responsible for the initial paddling trails program. I believe we have six or seven. How many do we have now?
Well, there are already seven coastal trails. We have three inland and six more coming on board very soon.
Oh, that's on the internet. You can pick them up off the bar, that's what I think.
Melissa will talk more about paddling trails. Linda Campbell has been in charge of the Hunt Texas program. She can talk about that. And Darcy Fontempo is going to talk a little bit about the marketing. So I guess we'll start with you, Shelley.
Okay. Again, I'm Shelley Plant. And as Scott said, we were looking at the potential of really consolidating a lot of information that already existed on the Parks and Wildlife website in various formats. There's great Texas Wildlife Trails that has public and private sites. We have all the state parks information that is actually working on
activity already, equestrian activity, mountain biking activity, and camping facilities, and all of that information is online. But all of these things are in very disparate locations. You have to kind of search for them. So we were looking for a way to really put it all in one area, and the Experience Texas website links from the main page of Parks and Wildlife websites. It's very easily accessible. The online directory, we can now put all of the information that already exists into a main directory. And since people are searching for information online and they're also searching for information by region, they can now go to this directory once it's complete and they'll be able to either pick a region, like they're going to the Gulf Coast, and see what hiking activities are available on the Gulf Coast. They can click hiking, they can click Gulf Coast and go, or they can click on a county. Say we're going to Travis County and we want to go birding and camping. What facilities exist for birding and camping in Travis County only? So it makes it very easy where they can pick a number of activities and they can pick where they're going, but they can also pick what kind of accommodations they want. We will have accommodations listings on there for camping, RV hookups, our hotels, our bed and breakfasts are all things, and camping on-site or camping off-site, because some of our private landowners do offer camping and RV facilities. So we're really trying to make this as user-friendly as possible, as well as consolidating all the information that already exists, so
So people will still be able to go out and look in the state park area. They'll be able to look at the Great Texas Wildlife Trails website or the Texas Paddling Trails website. But for those that are more general travelers that are just interested in connecting with the outdoors, we have this service now where we'll be able to allow them to travel more efficiently and hopefully help them do that. And the things that were a catalyst for that were the success of the Paddling Trails program last year. It really took off, and we thought, well, why aren't we expanding this to more activities? And then the Hunt Texas Online was also coming up and launching this fall, and it just seemed like they all held it together in a way to really be a service to our constituents.
And most of us heading more about the Paddling Trails.
My name is Melissa Parker, and I work in the Inland Fisheries Division. And we started, you know, as I mentioned, the Coastal Fisheries Division had started with paddling trails, you know, several years ago and had 7 trails. And we were interested in developing some inland trails, and we had a lot of help and support from Commissioner Montgomery in getting that started. And we were really amazed and surprised, actually, at the support that we got from the community of Blooming as we explored the idea of doing the paddling trail. And what came to the forefront in that was that they saw the potential economic boom that they could have from having the paddling trail and people coming to town, because they would stay and do other things in town as well. And it gave us the opportunity to promote our park and other such things. And so as Blooming became such a success, we were inundated with communities from all over the state, you know, asking if we want a paddling trail, how do we get one? And that's when we decided to move the paddling trails under the umbrella of the nature tourism, because it seemed to fit right in. People weren't traveling just to paddle, they were doing other things as well. So it's turned out to be quite a great marketing tool for us, and communities really want to come to us because they know that we can help promote beyond what they can do. And one of the benefits we see as a department in promoting paddling trails and moving this program forward is that it gives us the opportunity up front to go in and educate people about, you know, river conservation, river ethics, about private lands and how to behave along the river, that the banks are actually privately owned, that kind of thing. So it gives us the chance to be a little bit proactive in that measure, whereas before we're really more responding to problems on the river. We get to go out and post this on the website, post it on kiosks, get it in community information, the maps that are developed, that kind of thing. So it's been a big help to us in that area. It's a tremendous tool. And then the other benefit that we have statewide is that there's a tremendous economic potential there for our community. So.
How many different, how many of our ecoregions are currently covered by paddling trails and paddling routes, and how many are we missing, and where are they?
We're only going to see in East Texas. We're missing the Dallas Fort Worth area, North Texas area. Missing Panhandle. That's going to be a harder one in
Western.
The
Canadian River is listed as a navigable waterway. You know, when there's enough water in it to navigate, I'll call you. You'll carry my
copy. And we actually have that inquiry from all those regions that I mentioned. So we have such an influx of applications that we haven't pursued those interests yet.
Sure.
People still are already on our plate. But it's getting much more expansive.
Yeah.
We have at least 16 other inquiries other than the ones that we're actually working on now that are very interested beyond, you know, just a quick phone call to us. They've pursued it. So.
Right.
I think that stuff for take is really important. One, it's a ton of demand.
Yeah.
It creates a sustainable constituency.
Right.
We don't have to own it. It's brand new.
No, that's what's sweet.
It literally
yeah.
mm-hmm.
works for sure. And works for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're trying to tie to the park system to help drive traffic to the resources we already have.
Mm-hmm.
And to the communities of it.
Yeah, the community knows all this. Great.
And we actually have communities going out and improving existing access sites that we wouldn't have had the dollars otherwise to do.
And that's
yeah.
just a delay on some of the people that haven't submitted their applications yet, if they're trying to get up to standards. They're trying mm-hmm. to get those access points ready and parking at those access points to really be ready to do the application and move.
Yeah.
taking standards in the USEP, certain standards that are required to be part of the,
yes,
the branding requirements.
Parking access.
Parking access, distance of the trail itself, that kind of thing. We want to get people on the line.
Designed to have to follow our standards. We put together with the overall look of the kiosk design. I mean,
good point. Yeah.
We have a standard like
that. You know it's an Avalon Trail for Duncan Parking Lot.
And the concept of working at nature tourism, paddle trails, public tunnel, and cars, and then equestrian license, even though the catalyst, the brander, doesn't have to own it, it increases the sustainable decision,
yes,
and packages. Bite-sized chunks of fruit members who feel like they have to do something.
Yeah.
I don't have to do it. Just, you know, I go here and I think that they don't have to
figure it out. Wonderful.
That's what happens in each of those areas.
It's exciting.
Yes, sir. So,
Phil, kudos. Kudos to you for
driving this.
You're the spark. They're the fire.
I just recognize how much a good idea is.
We've got it. I wanted to ask, will you eventually, I don't know the computer terminology, but will you eventually hook our website to websites like all of the newspapers, all of our outdoor column people, where a lot of people read the newspapers and they want to go hunting, or they want to for a particular item, or they're looking for these, or they're wanting to do this or that. Will we seek permission from all of these other, the broad scope of the electronic
Yeah, given that the internet is such a key thing, we've already spoken with the governor's office. I'm Darcy Van Temp, I'm the marketing director, also a computer website for the agency. Is we are going to be very aggressively pursuing those kinds of opportunities. We've already spoken with the governor's office, which has their, you know, obviously is going to pull, attract out of state as well as in state travelers, nature tourism travelers, and they're very supportive of it. They think it has a value, so I think there's no question that wherever we can develop those partnerships, we're going to be seeking definitely to have that link.
Well, I was sure that you had already taken care of it. I just wanted to get it broadcast so
absolutely
that everyone will know how efficient you folks are.
Thank you.
And I mentioned, Darcy, I don't know if I'm stealing your thunder, but she said there's an important point here, too, that is possible she brought to Commissioner Parker's point. You all probably read the principle that seen the explosion of internet communities to where people in common interest. You probably read the principle that those communities are valuable exponentially. The value of those communities increases exponentially to the participant based on the number of participants.
Sure.
The more people on it, they become increasingly valuable. Shelley picks up on that, and Darcy picks up on it, and what they're trying to do wants to start with a bang. A whole bunch of these on there, but TPWE has potential to really be create the internet community for aggregated outdoor recreational and hunting products, if you will. Go look at it commercially.
Mm-hmm.
And to create probably cross-selling and a higher degree of awareness among all players. And as you all know, everybody in the city goes to the internet now for your information. So they get there, but then you see the former government, it should have an exponential effect on people keeping opportunities or interested in opportunities. So that's the premise behind it, why it has a lot of potential mm-hmm. power, even though it's in the early 5 or 6 years. And Scott McGill, the writer of the said, we didn't put all this together in the boom. But you saw the Forbes article last year on internet communities, it's really dramatic on how many economies.
One question, yes, sir. On an issue where the river passes by private lands, what sort of notification does that landowner get before you initiate this concept?
That's part of the process before we even establish the trail, is that there's public meetings, there's meetings about it, we notify the landowners, let them know. We had in Luling, there was one concerned landowner who came to the table and said, hey, I've got concerns about this, and we were able to talk with him individually and get him all kinds of information. By the time it was all said and done, he was one of the biggest supporters of it all. So, but yes, we will, you know, we're just not going to go and put a trail in where
it's... Well, one of the requirements is that some government will endorse the project.
Exactly.
Right.
Just for that reason.
Right.
I think...
one of the points that came to light early was that in the education process, in the information providing process, kind of the training process, that people are out there using the rivers now and unknowingly possibly leaving trash or using the you know, regional landfall and camping or picnicking or doing whatever they're doing. But part of this process is to get those people involved in the river to understand the value not trashing it out and not abusing private property rights. And when that becomes evident, I think over time this will be even better accepted by landowners over what they have right now. A couple of points that I want to make. You know, coastal fisheries started the paddling trails, what, Melissa, 4 or 5 years ago or more, and very successful. And those folks really saw this vision, I think, a number of years ago and work on it. A question, have any of these communities tied into this yet with our local park grant program?
Actually, yes, we were just in Bastrop yesterday, and one of the local park grants that they'll be applying for will be started tomorrow. They have, and we make them aware of that and get them in contact.
One of my final questions was, can we be sure if the commission likes this program that we look at the criteria for scoring local parks to get bonus points for participation in the state grant program?
There are bonus points now built into the TIM story system for conservation, you know, conservation points, but I think this one might deserve a special look.
This just turns the local park into a local out of state.
Before we move on, I'd like to make one additional comment, too. I think, especially for the new commissioners, I often get the question, you know, how do you fund this kind of program? Is it a line item funding issue? And since it's the Finance Committee, it probably is worth at least addressing that. And the answer is no. These are the kind of initiatives that, were we to try to find money on a line item basis for this, we'd have to stop doing something else. This is the kind of program that I think grows out of the good faith effort of a cross-divisional commitment. And so I've got the commitment from the Wildlife Division, the Coastal Inland, and Communications Division to do this with this existing talent. So this is one of many programs here that if you were to look in our LAR or any other budget items, you wouldn't see a line item that said online directory budget. These are folks that are doing other jobs too, but this is a strong commitment from them to make this happen.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Linda Campbell. I'm the Program Director in the Wildlife Division, Private Lands and Public Hunting. And Hunt Texas, just a few points on that. The idea began really as a way to address the challenges that landowners face with overabundant deer populations and match that to the challenges that hunters face in finding good leases for hunting. And in a private land state, that's quite a challenge to find, you know, good places to hunt. So this web application was designed specifically to ensure the privacy of both the hunters and the landowners. They can contact one another anonymously until they're ready to go forward if they get to that point. So it maintains privacy for the private landowner, which we felt was quite important to them. And the other thing I wanted to tell you is we did test this in-house with employees playing the roles of both landowners and hunters. We tested it in our IT room, the actual application itself. They used it. They registered as landowners and registered as hunters and tried to find any bugs in the application, and it worked real well. We feel like the test helped us clarify language to make it clearer to those using it and improve usability generally. And again, the goal is to increase hunting opportunity while at the same time providing landowners with another option in marketing their wildlife resources and managing their habitats through population control. The rollout strategy, as Scott has alluded to, we wanted to populate it with our landowners first. So our first target will be landowners beginning September through about May, and really, you know, speak to our landowner organizations, try to hit all of our various ways that we talk to landowners through field days and other ways that they will know that this service is available to them. And then in June, we'll roll it out to the general public to try to really get hunters focused on it at that time through our media releases, news releases, and other media. So any questions on that?
Are you doing any around the table discussions with what you what can we do to entice large landowners who have a overpopulation of deer to participate in this program? Is there any enticement that we can offer that large landowner?
Well,
if there is not, can we dream up some?
Yeah. Well, Commissioner, that's a good question, and we're going to make sure that they know about this service, first of all, and there are other services out there on the Internet. Some are free and some are not. But the privacy issue is the main thing that we were looking at here for landowners, I think that's going to be very important, especially to the larger landowners, to make sure that they can screen these communications in an anonymous way until they're actually ready to, if they want to.
But what I'm saying is, if we can come with an oak cluster in our hand saying that if you will do this, we're going to be able to offer you these options or income options to do this. And I don't even know what they might be. I'm just saying that if you folks in your barnstorming could come up with something that has never come up before to offer these larger landowners enticements, because there is a very rich resource item there in that they have that overpopulation of deer. Mm-hmm. The only thing we've got to do is unlock their gates and their hearts to make it more available to our metropolitan type
we can certainly look at that and think about it. At this point, we're just trying to enable them to communicate with potential customers in a real secure manner. And the other thing is this database offers all the various searchable items that Shelley spoke about in the online directory. In other words, you can search by game and county and all the various ways so that people can really hone down on what they're looking for. Landowners can also list exactly what they have, and so the two will match up nicely.
Mister, I think one of the issues that always comes up when we get into this discussion with landowners and an enticement there, as opposed to some sort of cash reward or keep on enforcement or actually running the hunt for them, which becomes a real problem, manpower wise. One of the first issues that comes up is liability insurance. I mean, every time. And people, I think, are often shy away from this kind of involvement, this kind of public activity, this kind of use on their property for those fears. And we continue to work with the legislature, with the Attorney General, and I would certainly encourage the commission and staff to continue that effort to be able to provide the protection from liability as much as possible. We've not gotten much, encouragement in that area in past efforts, but it's something I think to continue to work on. It's almost always the first issue that comes up.
Bob, there's one thing that maybe we should take a look at is what other states do in that regard, because I'm told that there are some other states, especially the states who deal with private land, BLM, private land, national park, private land, where they have to go to the the charge that is made to the customer and then shared with the landowner, part of that goes to pay for an insurance policy that covers liability to the landowner.
Well, that was actually going to be my question, Bob, is the whole liability issue, because until we solve that, it's going to be very difficult to expand this program. But, you know, unless is there a way through the legislature to get some type of governmental immunity that would extend to the landowners? Because even if you didn't have insurance and so on, it would still be concerned about having...
The question has been posed several times, and we've not gotten an Ann Wright. I would ask to Ann, would you expand on this a little bit?
I'm Ann Wright, General Counsel. There is currently on the books a recreational immunity statute, and it provides, depending on basically how much a landowner charges to allow people to recreate on their land, it provides some degree of immunity, or at least it limits the liability, so long as there is insurance coverage. Which one of the things that does is it makes the insurance coverage more available or more affordable, because there are limits on the amount of liability. So the insurer that's signing on to this knows that they're not ever going to have to pay out more than X dollars. There was an opinion that came, we're covered by that as well, the agency, because most of our lands are recreational lands. There was a Supreme Court opinion that came out, golly, probably about a year ago, that seemed to limit that a little bit, and we were kind of hoping that might, frankly, get changed in the legislature, but that didn't. But it's still there, and it still does provide some immunity, and I know that's something that it does. Lots of entities are interested in. I know the Municipal League was very active in some of the litigation and have been very active in trying to make sure that adequately covers recreational users.
So there is a starting point.
There is, absolutely. And in fact,
all you have to do is move forward.
Absolutely, sir. And in fact, there is it's my understanding that there are similar statutes in other states as well.
We spent quite a bit of time on the two questions we asked. One, whether the incentives and liability question was educated by you two about how the statute works and where its weaknesses are. In fact, Mark Struther informed me a few years ago when first we talked to Senator Fielding. I think it's a matter of policy. That's the one the commission will focus on. Linda, correct me if I'm wrong, but are there 10,000 public funds available on CPWD communities and parks right now? How many public funds do you have?
6,000.
There's 60,000 applications, $6,900 a month. There's a giant mismatch in the supply and demand curve that we can't fill the dollars. What we're trying to do here is create a market mechanism on the branded product that can help fill that gap, especially for the thing that isn't value now, the surplus fear population is hard to get, and liability is the impediment.
But
the market will clear it, I think, if we create the mechanism to solve the liability problem. It's probably some mix of a pool, a better, tighter state law, and other things. But that's something the commission will weigh in on if the commission wants to really promote more affordable, stronger hunting opportunities.
But this is exactly what they're talking about doing. The more affordable and doing a marriage with some of the larger landowners.
This mechanism will help.
So we have a starting point for the liability insurance.
We have a starting point, but it's not.
I point out the two commissioners that some of the same issues when you start talking equestrian, when you start talking biking, same issues really come to mind immediately. And some of it is just, you know, getting accustomed to it, getting used to it, adjusting to it. And I think it's just one of those points that at this point in time we have been working on it, we've continued to work on it. With your support, hopefully we'll continue to make some progress.
And you know, maybe we could even get a small cross section of large landowners together and say, this is what we're doing. What do you think about it? Punch holes in it so that we can cover up the holes. At least then, we could, it would look like to me that you could at least have on the record of what a problem might be there, because you have a marvelous idea here. The whole concept is just marvelous. And we have a starting point, a land on this this other item, and gee, I think you're standing on the diving board, you've got to get a little spring in it.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Darcy Bontempo, and I just was going to touch briefly on the marketing for this new product, which is very exciting from the standpoint of there really isn't anything like this in Texas. I can't speak for other states, but there's really nothing like this that takes all the various types of recreational activities and puts them under one platform such that we can talk to nature tourists with one product. So, because as we know, people that hunt also fish, also camp, also bike. And from a marketing standpoint, it's very efficient. You aren't trying to market all these separate things. So that's very efficient. We also are very fortunate here at Parks and Wildlife. We have an outstanding web group that does recognize many times, and we are in a unique position because of those resources to be able to develop a web-based application like this that will be searchable, that will be user-friendly, because that is a big key. It has to be convenient, easy to use for the customer, so they're going to be able to come and, as Shelley outlined, look for maybe birding, and then when they're there, find out that there's camping or fishing or other things. So we'll be working very hard on completing development of the product, which is part of the marketing as well, which is going to be going to be a big effort for us, but it's an undertaking we're very excited about. And then from a marketing standpoint, we're going to be, as you mentioned, Commissioner Parker, we're going to be doing a lot of online promotion of it through partnerships and linking. We're going to be obviously using our TPWD communication products, our magazine, our radio program, et cetera, to get the word out. We're also going to be using our email subscription service, where we have a growing number of subscribers who actually want to receive free information on updates. So all the people assigned for hunting will be learning about this Hunt Texas online connection, as well as people who are interested in camping will be finding about the online directory. So we're going to be working on branding it. By that I mean coming up with a name that is easy for customers to remember and for us to advertise. So we'll be working on that as well. But it's a really exciting opportunity, and we're going to be working with our partnerships and our products to get the message out, because we obviously, the key thing is we've got to let people know about it. So in any case, it's a project that I think has a lot of value, and we're going to be working on it, I think, for many years. So.
How many, as far as just websites, how many bits do we get?
For our website? Well, we get...
I guess another question. Is there any ability on our part to be able to sell advertising and do some other things to create some revenue to help underwrite this whole program?
To your first question, we get about 500,000 visits a month on our website. And our website has been recognized for being one of the, not only one of the best websites, but also one of the most visited websites. So, and it's very rich in content, which is part of the reason for that too, and they spend quite a bit of time on the website. We have talked about advertising. I am very interested in pursuing that. Right now, we do sponsorships. We are able to get some support through sponsorships. But I would be interested, and that's something that we have talked about, is as this develops, the possibility of doing some advertising. I think we just have to be a little bit careful, because we don't want to be competing with private business. I mean, that's where you get a little bit into a sticky issue. But it's something that we are interested in. We'd like to continue to explore and welcome your input on that.
Competing with private business, help me understand that.
Well, there are the web advertising business is a very important and growing business that's going to eclipse other forms of advertising, print media and so forth. So there are a lot of, we get contacted almost on a daily basis by websites that are making their business by promoting, whether it's outdoors or travel, and they're wanting our content, our information, and they're selling advertising on those websites. So that's where I'm seeing a potential issue. If we develop, using state resources, a very attractive marketing tool and then sell advertising, I'm just saying there could be a potential issue.
If you're going to have any sets a month, though, it seems to me like there's a tremendous opportunity.
I agree. I'm very interested in it. No, I'm interested in it. That's something I'm very interested in. I'm just posing a potential issue. Sure. Believe me, that's one of the first things I was interested in doing. So I agree.
Could we come in the back door on that advertising? That's not particular the sales advertising on our space, but those people who want a spot in our space, if they derive some sort of income off of their
revenue sharing sort of model, you mean?
Right.
I think all those things are open for discussion. I know that they all, obviously our general counsel would need to be very involved, and it's something that I would, upper management and commission, to, you know, input on that. I think there are many avenues to explore.
Some people skim from the neck back, and others skim from the...
John, we don't want to use
I think we have to decide what our key role in this is going to be. I mean, you know, what our key role is going to be. I think that the one issue with that is there are many issues. One thing is, if you do that, you begin to limit some of the providers that might then participate, right, and that would then defeat kind of the bigger vision. So you kind of have to decide where the big vision is on it, I think. That would be my only point there, is that you might limit participation. Yeah. But I'm open to all input on that. So.
For instance, just to show you all, there's a lot of policy issues there. This working group has been running with it for sub Rosa, has done a great job. I want to thank one, it's been a pleasure working with each other. It's a very exciting area. As you all know, I'm a reappointment with Rosa, so it's part of my last meeting. Asked to have this briefing so that you all would see the range of strategic policy issues here, because I think particularly the new members, but also all of these new areas, because they're new and different, the commissioners and all that make a difference. They are going to need support and pride. They will demand more resources of all kinds if they're going to grow, and the growth rates here are pretty undramatic. Nature tourism, got Shelley covered up, she was asked to take this on. Moments of that is through job, and it's just paddle threads are exploding. There's a lot of consumer demand for the package. And that, going back to land and water climate, all worked on. I guess people all be around there, but that's the strategic element of the plan, is to create authentic urban dwellers and to do that in a strategic way, to take it over the assets. We create assets here to add value for us, not if we do it right. So I would hope each of you would come to some kind of a champion and encourage you to do it and play you can improve on big impact. We're still very in the pilot stage here. But Scott, I think you put all this all together with each of you. Personally, it's been a real pleasure. I think you're doing something important.
No, I mean, this is one of the most important programs that we've got.
It's incredible.
It's incredible. It's exciting. Very exciting.
I sat here now for over 6 years and heard speaker tell us that hunting and fishing is back.
Right.
We have some very high growth businesses. We get to the group of population we're not getting to in a systematic way, and who create sustainable constituencies for conservation, which is our core mission, is what we action right and build them up into real viable constituents. And you don't have to own the properties to do it.
That's right.
So there's really something pretty big here if we do it right. I don't think it's being done around the country, but systematically, if you're not broken, you haven't talked about it. So hope you all pick it up and run with it, and I'll turn this up.
You're not
gone.
It
will only work in progress if commission.
True. And
you know, when you're off, when you're on, you're on.
Yeah.
It will matter if commission takes interest and supports it, taking it strategic.
Phil, I applaud your
absolutely
forward thinking. This is this could be one of the this right here could be one of the things that leaps us into the century that we're already in. It's really good.
Well, this group is a big one. It's quite meaningful for me, so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, I knew you were going
to be 7:30.
Scott, anything else? And thank you, Lester. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Commissioner? No. This is one of the most exciting things going on, I think, in Avis. So, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well worth it.
Thank you.
Right.
All right. We're going to take your nap.
Yeah. Is there any other discussion on this by the commission? Okay. Thank you, everybody. Committee item number two, Land and Water Plan update. Mr. Cook.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of items I want to make y'all aware of, and again, in an effort to keep the word out. We kicked off the sales of our 2008 hunting and fishing licenses last Wednesday, and it just went gangbusters there for several days. And sales are progressing well. The updated system of equipment across the state is functioning well. We're prepared for our peak sales period, which is just going to come crashing down on us on this Friday, Saturday, Labor Day weekend. So we are really, really working every day to get the word out, encouraging folks to get their licenses bought now and miss that Friday, because that'll be an interesting day. Staff also continues to work on addressing our state park audit recommendations. From a finance standpoint, our internal audit has hired most of the additional auditors that will conduct the audits out of the state park. I believe we were looking for 16, and I think we're now sitting on 14 with several others in the mill, additional auditors to work the parks. We've also been preparing our comprehensive implementation plan that will be submitted to the LBB, the State Budget Board, and the Governor prior to the August deadline, as required in one of our riders. And Mr. Borff will be addressing some other audit progress during his presentation later on here.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? I know that was a lot,
in
a short period of time for our new commissioners, but the state audit is something that's required. And of course, particularly the Senate, as we went through the legislative period this last period, and I want to congratulate Scott and his group, particularly about we're ahead of the curve. Of course, and what they're supposed to be in. So not only they've done a thorough job, but we're doing it in appropriate time frames. And I think because of that, then we're going to, our goal is to get that cooperation back and forth between the state and the state office. Any other discussions? Right, okay. Committee item number three, financial overview. Mr. Harry Fields.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, I'm Mary Fields, Chief Financial Officer, and I'm here to provide the financial overview. We have several items on the agenda today that I'll be covering with you. The focus of the presentation will be to provide a revenue and budget status for fiscal year 2007. We will provide an annual status report on our business improvement plan, present the proposed fiscal year 2008 operating and capital budget, as well as budget and investment policy resolutions. So, start off with the 2007 revenue and budget status. We'll start off with state park receipts. When comparing state park gross receipts through June 30th at $28.69 million, we're up 5.5% or $1.49 million over last year's collections at the same time. In reviewing the categories of park receipts, all of the categories exceed the prior year except for entrance and use fees. Those are just slightly down. Most notable are the facility fees and the activities and concession fees. I have also looked at revenues as of August. And even with the flooding that has occurred in some of our state parks, we will meet our revenue estimates, and we will actually have some additional revenues to apply to some key areas. Our boat revenue as of June 30th is at $17.1 million. This is up by 8.5% or $1.34 million compared to last year at the same time. Again, all of the categories of the revenue are up, but the key driver here continues to be our boat registrations. We have that two-year cycle with the registrations. So this year, the odd year, is one of the up years. We also continue to transfer 15% of our registration entitling revenue to Fund 64, our state park fund, and that amounts to $2.2 million based on revenues through June. Our license sales, those are also up as of the end of June. At $84.7 million, we're at $2.1 million compared to last year, or 2.6%. All categories of revenue, again,
continue to be higher here. The primary contributor over this report is the fishing revenue, and that's up by almost 3.5% over the prior year. So it looks like those nice lake levels are contributing to the fishing line.
With the rails. And Mary Helen, when was there no fee increases in it, so this is truly just volume increase.
That's correct.
And when was the last time there were fee increases in the various
We did a pretty significant increases in fiscal year 2004, and we did implement the new freshwater fish stamp fund in 2005. There were no increases in 06 or 07. So we may be due to look at some.
Probably
worth
thinking about
talking to these tracks.
You're not breathing any air.
The adjustments monitors tend to be lag.
Right.
And take a long time. And you
can't. And we have a history of that.
Yeah,
and that sounds fine, but it's a very sensitive issue, as you can imagine. Right. So I just thought we will. And I don't disagree that definitely that's going to be part of the discussion. But we do definitely have to be very sensitive to our constituency and certainly the legislation, all legislators also. So I think as we discuss it, we need to be all-encompassing relative to somehow tying it to inflation if possible, but that can also create very sensitive situation, so I want to be careful of how we approach this. That's why I was asking the question on time frames relative to our last fee increases.
Yes, sir.
We can certainly review it, though, yes.
Oh, yeah, I think it's time to start talking.
I agree, Chairman, it is a topic I think worth discussing in this upcoming fiscal year.
Right. That's why Phil's getting off.
Okay, moving on here, just in looking at the number of licenses sold, they correlate fairly closely with the revenue that we just discussed. At $2.61 million, we're up 1.8% as of the end of June. I'm not going to go into all the details on this slide here. You can see the percentages of increases in the major categories.
Yeah, and in a way, this to me is the more important number in a sense. We're trying to see that we flattened out. In fact, we went down a while, now it's starting to come up.
Mm-hmm.
1.6 isn't a lot on the combo or overall 1.8%, but I think we finally reversed the trend a bit. Now we're going to figure out how to increase that percentage growth.
When comparing our fiscal year 2007 revenue collections as of June 30th to the annual revenue estimate, we continue to do well, which is really no surprise after discussing the revenue growth in all of our major sources. With 83% of the year elapsed, we have collected 86.3% of our Fund 9 Game Fish and Water Safety Fund's revenue. State Park Fund is showing at 103%. That percentage is relatively high right now because it does include the land sale proceeds from Eagle Mountain Lake. If you take those out to kind of get a more comparable review here, we're at about 92%, which is still very good. And we talked about the state park fees earlier, but this fund also includes oil and gas royalties, and those continue to do real well for us, which is one of the drivers here as well. The local park fund is at 105.9%, and the other category includes several funds, and they're all doing well at 115.2%.
Is that due to various in your fiscal year end?
August 31st. Yes, sir. Our overall budget has increased by $14.7 million since March 31st when we last reported on the budget. So we're at $346.7 million. Budget adjustments made during April, May, and June are summarized on the slide. The most significant adjustments this reporting period relate to the riders. That total of $9.7 million includes $5.5 million of additional revenues that we budgeted at mid-year as a result of Rider 27 and the controller certification of additional funds.
We also budgeted some unexpended balances amounting to $3.9 million. The majority of that was federal dollars. So I'll move ahead here. In reviewing budget versus expense, we have 34.4% of the budget remaining with 83% of the fiscal year left. All of the categories are basically on track. The capital expenditure line item does include a good bit of available balance, and we will carry some of that forward into fiscal year 2008, and we'll discuss that more when I discuss the operating budget for fiscal year 2008. The next topic is the business improvement plan. It is the status update. The last time I presented to the commission on this was last August. Out of the 94 items that were to be completed in that overall plan, there are 5 projects that are still in progress. One is scheduled to be complete during fiscal year 2008. The remaining projects will be completed by fiscal year 2010. These remaining projects really relate to automated system improvements that we're going to continue to work on and complete. These are well documented, and we have many plans to get those systems complete. At this point, I believe I will discontinue reporting on the business improvement plan. We're almost there, and we have other recommendations that we're tracking, so I am going to bring this one to a close.
On that point, and particularly the new commissioners, really have taken on a monumental task for the last 5 years of scrubbing out the agency, revising and upgrading. You all need to be comfortable. This one is really well run. I mean, it's buttoned down, well run, tight. And you're always going to hear the bell and down, they screw something up kind of thing when somebody gets mad, but they're doing a great job. So I hope that little point maybe is going through real fast. That was a big effort. For a long time, I've been on other stages, you know, public county boards, and you know, they do a great job, they run it well, and it's been looked at by independent, seasoned, very savvy outsider that came in and scrubbed it on the line. They've done a very dedicated job implementing all the recommendations, as you can see.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is the proposed fiscal year 2008 operating and capital budget for your consideration. Tomorrow we will be asking for your approval of the budget. As we discuss the budget today, I will recap our process to prepare the operating budget. We'll review the financing of the budget, provide a couple of summaries, review the capital budget, recap our full-time equivalent FTEs, and then I'll wrap it up with just a few key riders. For the most part, our process for preparing the operating budget is similar to prior years. So again, I'm just going to touch on a couple of key points here. We did use the appropriations received via the 80th legislature as our starting point. With the appropriations that we received, we were able to establish the operating budgets at or pretty close to 100% of the 2007 base budget for the division. Next, we allocated the exceptional item amounts to the appropriate divisions. For the divisions that support our agency, we did balance our funding for our Fund 9 activities that support the resource division and law enforcement versus our Fund 64 activities that support state parks. As we have done in past years, the divisions were given the opportunity to request additional funds for the budget. If the funds came with their own appropriation authority, we did move ahead with those. An example of those types of requests would be federal funds and donations. We did not budget salary lapse to meet budget demand. As positions are vacant throughout the year, there will be related salary lapse generated, and we'll hold those funds as contingency, and we'll apply them later in the year as needs arise.
I want to comment on that one, because every division here over the last 5 or 6 years has worked very hard to get to this point. I've always called it betting on the come. You know, we know there's going to be salary lapse, and in the past, go back a few years, we've always budgeted, we've always bet that that was going to happen at some degree, 3%, 4%, 5%, whatever it is. therefore we've never had any emergency contingency funding available for whatever the issue might be. This allows us, not budgeting salary lapse, which generally runs in that range of 3 to 6%, you can actually narrow that down to probably more like 4 to 6%, gives us the ability to come in January or February or in spring of the year. We have something going on, something happening, several hundred thousand dollars available to focus on an issue or to address a problem out there. And it is salary money. It is, you know, there are some limitations. It doesn't necessarily free us up to buy vehicles or some of those kind of things that we're restricted on. But it certainly gives the agency some flexibility that we have not had in decades. And I think it's real important, obviously.
It is something we've been striving for. We're there. Thanks, Bob. The last point I'm going to make here is about what the overall process is, that we did budget our capital items at 100%. And we have the authority to increase those line items up to 125%. And we may elect to add some capital at some point during the year, you know, if some of those last funds are out there. There is some ability to grow capital items. Let's review how the budget was falling in. As I mentioned, we start with the amount of appropriations that were received from the legislature via the General Appropriations Act. This session was a bit more complicated because some of our appropriations were contingent on certain bills being passed. The funds for these bills were outlined in riders that appear at the back of the General Appropriations Act in Article 9. As those bills were passed, we did add the additional appropriations. We also have 35 agency-specific riders that limit how our funds can be expended within the agency. And we will talk about a few of those riders toward the end of this presentation. We're also capped at the amount of full-time equivalents we can have, and that cap is at 3,100.1. This wasn't... Yeah, it's a full-time equivalent, so it's not perfect. This was a good session for us, as you know, and the next four slides highlight the additional funds that we added to that base budget. The first two slides I'm going to cover highlight additions to state and local parks, and the two slides total $75 million. As you can see here, we increased state park salaries and operating by $12 million. Capital items increased by $3.8 million. We applied $3.3 million to minor repair, and $2.7 million went to the support division. Local parks received an additional $26.5 million. This does include the $16.7 million that was designated for specific parks. And the balance goes to bring the local parks back to the $15.5 million per year that they used to receive. While we did not receive any new money for land acquisition, we are allowed to spend our land sale proceeds, and we can carry forward unexpended balances. We do have the $9.3 million that relates to Eagle Mountain Lake that we'll be carrying forward, and there's another $275,000 of park-related proceeds that we will carry forward. There is $17 million of Proposition 8 bonds that were added to the budget for statewide park repairs. And then there's another $27.1 million that's contingent on voter approval in November, and another $25 million in bonds for the battleship are also contingent on voter approval. So if those bonds are approved, we'll add that $52.1 million to the budget later in the year.
If I can just speak this quick, this is something that the legislature really helped us with. The parks have gotten way behind relative to dollars being allocated and appropriated to be able to be spent, particularly on capital improvements, and even normal day-to-day operational repairs. And so the legislature was very cooperative, and it was quite a battle, and Walt Dabney and a lot of other people in the agency helped educate our legislators, and as they learned the needs, they came through. So it was a good session. Now our job is to spend this money wisely, and that's what we're in the middle of right now. So, Terry, thanks for showing that. I think that's important.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, yes, if I understand it, those items that we just discussed about coming up this fall to be voted on, they're all rolled into one package. They are not just items for state park. It's all part of that big dollar amount.
I think it's also $1 billion of bonds. Mm-hmm. Mary, help me. Proposition 4 is about $1 billion, yeah, in which you can see we're really a very small amount. So there's a lot of things that are going to be on that list. Mm-hmm. The voters are going to vote.
They either vote for
yay or nay.
Or,
that's right,
the whole package,
or against.
Yeah,
that's correct. Right.
Right. We're going to have to do some homework.
Mm-hmm.
The next couple of slides highlight $25 million of additions for other areas in the department. There was $4.9 million added for the East Texas Fish Hatchery. Law enforcement received $1.27 million to put 15 additional wardens in place for border security, and another million for game warden operations. And we received an additional $1.5 million to cover the gap between our cost to provide data center services versus the price that we will pay the Department of Information Resources to acquire services from IBM.
Good point on that one. For them to do, I want you to understand this, for them to do what George Riss and his shop were doing is going to cost the state more. However, in the 27 agencies involved, I do believe that the consolidation will be beneficial to the state. And so they're helping make up the difference for the really lean and effective agencies like we were. And I want to give that credit to George Rios and his folks down in IT, who continue to do a great job. And but it's part of our culture here at the agency that I encourage you to be aware of and to support. In that, you know, getting effective people and working hard to do the job. And this is one of those that it just jumped right out at you. As soon as we got into it, we were going like, I'm not sure you guys will be able to help us. But we worked it out. We worked with them. We're still working on it, right? We're getting there.
Yeah. But this is part of the business plan that was put in place that Commissioner McGovern talked about, that Mary and George and just everybody have jumped on over the last 5 years, and as you said, it's really become a tight ship, and as it turned out, the legislature recognized this, and by this consolidation that's going on through many agencies of IT system, where everybody's going into one system, essentially, it turned out it would cost us a lot of money, mm-hmm, and the legislature recognized that, and it's actually giving us dollars to help offset that, so.
And we are appreciative of that. It's quick highlighted. Let's see. Moving ahead here, state employees received a 2% pay raise this year, and there were some Schedule C increases for our law enforcement. We had a total of $3.4 million in salary increases. We're carrying forward $445,000 of land sale proceeds for the Fund 9 related acquisitions. And we anticipate future proceeds to be added relating to the Game Warden Academy when that's sold. Finally, there was $12.5 million added for a coastal erosion project, but we will transfer that amount to the General Land Office via an interagency contract, and we are working on that. While there were several positives during this session, there were also a few reductions to discuss here. As you're all well aware, we are transferring 18 historic sites to the Historical Commission, and that transfer amounted to a $2.8 million reduction to our base, since we'll no longer operate those sites. The other transfers for the Texas State Railroad, and that results in an operating reduction of approximately $600,000.
Mary, sorry, on the historic site transfer, though, that was an agreement between Texas Parks Wildlife and Texas Historical Commission, there was THC.
That's correct.
And the dollars go with, as they should. And there were roughly 14 sites transferred?
18.
18, so that was an agreement between the two. I just want to make sure everybody understands that. We agreed, they agreed, money's transferred. It wasn't pushed or forced upon us. it was something that we all agreed on, and I think it makes a lot of sense for both groups. So, personally, I think it's a problem.
I spoke earlier during the session about there was, we used to have an administrative reduction strategy, and that reduction amount is close to $500,000. They did eliminate that separate strategy and rolled it into our other strategies, but we did take that reduction. And finally, the appropriation bill does include revenues that we have not yet collected. And so we did reduce the amount of appropriation by $7.9 million because we haven't earned those funds yet. So we'll budget them as we earn them. This next slide basically crosswalks the budget, and it starts with the General Appropriations Act, and then we make adjustments to get to our total operating budget. So we start with the $291.1 million, and there I rolled several of the adjustments up. We talked about those contingent funds that were tied to some bills. There was an increase of $24.6 million there. Employee pay raises of $3.4 million. We added federal funds of $15.5 million, and you will see this category increase over the year as we sign additional federal agreements. We're adding unextended balances of $44.8 million for construction and land acquisition, and I'll cover that in a little more detail when we discuss the capital budget. We are estimating our employee fringe benefits at $37.3 million, and we do set those funds aside for the employee retirement system. And finally, I combined several other adjustments that resulted in a decrease of $10.9 million. This next slide here is a view of our method of finance for the budget. I will point out that we do earn about 40% of our funding when you look at the Fund 9, our Game Fish and Water Safety Fund, which includes the license and boat revenues at 30%, and then you add the Fund 64 State Park revenues at 10%. The remaining funding there comes from general revenue at 22%, our other general revenue dedicated accounts are at 8%. I will mention the largest account in that group is Fund 467 for our local parks. The other category includes bonds, land sale proceeds, and other funds. That's at 14%, and then finally federal funds at 16% of the budget. We do have a pretty complicated method of finance, and it's a challenge to keep up with all these various funds and sources, so moving on to just summarizing the budget in a couple of different ways. This first summary gives a broad overview of our budget by object of expense, and I've included comparable totals to fiscal year 2007. You can see the salaries are up, and that's expected due to our increased employees in state parks and law enforcement and the other divisions, along with those employee pay increases that I talked about. The operating budget has increased primarily for the state park operating. With grants, you can see the impact of the additional funds that were added for local parks. And the capital expenditures include all the capital budgets. And you're seeing there the impact of those additional bonds that I discussed and then some unextended balances we're carrying forward. The debt service there is for the Prop 8 bonds that are in the budget and the revenue bonds for the hatchery. These next couple of slides just highlight our budget by divisions. You see the division's budgets in millions and the percent of the total agency budget, just to give you a sense of the size of each division. And I'll just mention that this is how the agency really operates with our budgets. Each division has a detailed budget that they manage. Actually, there's within the handouts that Ms. Hemby handed out to you, there is an Exhibit B in there that basically lays out each of the division's budgets. But I actually like that summary because it also includes that budget by object of expense for each division, and it includes the full-time equivalent for each one. So it's just a one-page kind of nice look at
budget. There's also another exhibit, and I did not prepare slides for it. It's our agency budget by strategy at Exhibit A in your handout. This is how the legislature really views our budget. We do have 28 strategies, so they're not on the slide, but you can see them there. And it also includes the method of finance for the agency, which is relates to that pie chart that we just reviewed a couple of slides back. In looking at the division budgets, there is a category called department-wide, and it is fairly sizable. I do usually get questions on what's in department-wide, so I did go ahead and do a summary of that here. We do have $20 million that we're holding in construction right now, and we haven't designated all that to the specific division. As soon as those projects are prioritized and highlighted, we will move those budgets. The remaining areas, really, those are areas that support the entire agency, so we put them in department-wide. Moving on to the capital budget, I provided an overview here by category. This first column that you're looking at is the base amount for capital, and then we add amounts that we're able to include via Rider 20. This rider allows us to grow our capital items for federal or other funds that are designated for a specific capital purpose. And finally, we are showing unexpended balances from 2007 that we're carrying forward. So you see the land acquisition, that's primarily the Eagle Mountain Lake proceeds, and then we have construction and major repairs carrying forward at $34.8 million. So when you come down to all of our total capital budget, we're at $83.7 million. Next, recapping our full-time equivalents. While it was good to get an increase in FTEs, showing our cast amount does get a bit complicated, so I'm going to walk you through this. The first two lines total the 2901.8, which was our FTE cap for fiscal year 2007. The next couple of lines show the number of FTEs that were added to, due to the state park exceptional items. Next, we see the additional game wardens being added for border security, additional staff to implement parts of the water bill, reductions for those historic site transfers, and the transfer of information technology services to Department of Information Resources via the IBM data center. So this brings our total FTE count to that 3,100.1 that we talked about earlier, which is an increase of 198.3 FTEs over the prior year. Just one other quick recap of this, I wanted to show you kind of a comparable between 07 and 08. You can see our budgeted FTEs and then in gold the cap. And we are going to be fairly tight this year with our FTEs. We did increase them a little bit more than we did in the prior year, so we'll watch our FTE count closely. We are required to stay within that cap.
I just want to comment here. This is a really positive thing. This is very, very helpful, particularly in state parks. You look at the back of the slide there, Mary, you look at that list, and I think one of the important things to point out there is that the 65 and the 9 and the prints down there, you know, yes, we lost those FTEs, but they went with the property. So we do not have that responsibility. If I'm looking at what I've got to do and what I've got to do it with, I've got a lot more to do what I've got to do with. You know, so it's a really a positive thing and very much needed. We are in the process of advertising, hiring. Walt is well on his way to having these folks in place in our state parks, and we are very appreciative of that.
Yeah, the legislature is great. I mean, but one of the examples is the legislature required that there be 16 new auditors added, and so some of it was needs that were already there within the agency, and some that the legislature wanted, as you saw, after our budget fairly dramatically, particularly compared to some other agencies on a percentage basis. And so, all in all, I think it was a fair trade-off. And so I think we're in pretty good shape. And it helps Walt particularly get some marks back on some key to key. We've been kind of sinking slowly, haven't we, Walt? So I think this is going to be a big help. Yes, sir.
Mr. Bender, his historical note. I think Bob, if I remember right, in 2009 or 2015, and it's the first time since then we've gone longer than that.
That's about the right year, about in there, somewhere 2099, 2000, 2001. We were, I think, slightly over 3,000, maybe 3,026 comes to mind, something like that. And since then, we've been knocking down, and this really.
The point there to me is the FT's services went up. In the field, John Bob moved a lot of people out in the field from headquarters, shifting those around. So over that 5-6 year period, service delivery actually went up. People in the field went up, followed up, and they come down. The straitjacket is taken off now, but it's still down there.
Well, I want to make the point too that it's not like they're going to be just bogged down with people. You know, these are very, very specifically placed people, part by part by part. We've listed out, as you may recall, in our request.
Yeah, each part.
Specifically by part, you know, what was needed, the staffing that was needed, and that's where those funds will be directed, right to those exact things that we asked for.
And Commissioner, I'm not to argue, but the one area we had started getting hurt in service was in the parks.
Okay.
And if we hadn't had the volunteer help, there were parts we were having to cut back hours. And I think there's potential there, if we do it the right way, is as these people are added, they will produce more revenue, which is the goal. And that's one of the things that we talked very strongly to the legislature about. They came to agreement with us on it, and it allowed us more FTEs and more dollars with that to go out and search for and create more revenue. And I think that's going to be our job, from now on, of course, but particularly over the next couple of years, to really focus on.
Let me add what I was saying, because that's what I was trying to make in your mind, but I was going to go on your staff, because I had part, you'd increase service delivery, but I'm strict to ask them for
exactly.
I just want a new commission to know, let's put this over staff.
Right. No, good point. Well, you look at population growth just in the state, much less because people coming into the state who want to go to our park somewhere. There's a lot of demand there, we need to fill it.
I'll move on to the last topic to cover relating to the operating and capital budget, and that is our key riders. We do have several of them. We reviewed these riders in quite a bit of detail during the budget workshop in July, so I'm going to just quickly highlight them today. This first set of riders are the audit-related riders. When we received those additional appropriations, we also received several directives on how the money could be spent, as well as expectations that audit recommendations would be implemented, reports would be submitted, and in several instances we will submit reports to the Legislative Budget Board and the Governor's Office, and we'll need to have plans approved prior to the release of funds for some of the specific purposes. So we'll be very busy this upcoming biennium addressing all of these requirements. The next slide highlights some other key riders for our agency relating to basically caring for the unexpended balances, exempting us from capital provisions in certain circumstances, appropriating balances and land sale proceeds, implementing recommendations from the Legislative Budget Board. They also did a review last year. We'll be reporting on the usage of equipment, and then the transfer of the Texas State Railroad and funds to be directed to specific local park projects. So several of those riders are providing quite a bit of detail for us. There were also a few key Article 9 riders that included details on those additional appropriations and bonds that we received via the contingent passage of those bills, and the bills did pass. So that basically concludes my presentation on the proposed operating and capital budget. I'm going to move into the final segment that I'll be covering with you today. Annually, we are required to review the budget and investment policy. And again, a copy of both of those policies is included in your handout for action items for tomorrow's meeting. There have been no changes to the budget policy, so I'm just going to touch on a couple of key points here. The commission does authorize the executive director to approve and execute necessary expenditures, budget adjustments, and transfers. There are several different types of transactions that are detailed in the policy. Budget adjustments excluding federal funds and grant or federal grants and bonds that exceed $250,000 do require prior approval from the chairman of the commission and the chairman of the finance committee. And within the budget policy, one of the transactions is to allocate Super Combo license sale revenue to the related stamp funds. We have a documented methodology, and by implementing that methodology, we also have related transfers of revenue to those appropriate stamp accounts. Our basic methodology really is to allocate the stamp funds by determining really how the stamps were used. And we do have a survey where we survey the Super Combo buyers and ask them if they use various pieces of the Super Combo. So this slide here basically just highlights how those various aspects or items are used. So I'm just going to cover the first one as an example. If you look there, according to the survey, in 2007, 94.1% of the Super Combo buyers surveyed said they did use the hunting license versus 94.6% prior year. We are still actually bringing in survey results. I believe Jean told me we're about 30 to 40% have actually responded. We will continue to receive survey results and we'll do kind of a final analysis in September.
Did you 30 to 40% of the total responded?
I believe that's correct.
Who was surveyed? So what would that sample size be?
5,000.
5,000.
Statistics.
The consistency is just extremely remarkable.
One question on the Upland Gamebird stamp, as an example, the percentage going down means if I purchase the Upland Gamebird stamp, there's less people hunting Upland Gamebirds than there were in the prior year.
Of the survey respondents, yes, there's a fewer percentage that use the Upland Gamebird stamp as of this point.
Is that shift over Super Combo?
Okay, so Super Combo.
That's right.
Yeah, that's only in the use of the Super Combo. Remember, this is just the Super Combo.
Okay.
And so you may see people shifting in and out of the Super Combo, possibly just going to a straight hunting license with the Gamebird stamp. So
right.
It doesn't necessarily mean the hunting population as a whole, it's just the Super Combo.
And the purpose is to allocate the revenue from the Super Combo sales back to the appropriate
But we don't have any reason to think that we have attrition out of Super Combo to regular licenses, do we?
No, in fact, our Super Combo sales are increasing. As we continue to add stamps and so forth, we're seeing people move out of the combo into the Super Combo and either out of individual hunting or fishing licenses into the Super Combo.
Which overall is a good thing.
Sure. Absolutely.
You see, we have to allocate dollars out. That's what they use the survey for. By statute, right? By regulation.
It's administrative rule.
Administrative rule.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In this next slide, actually, this is kind of the usage from the survey. This next slide shows how the dollars will be applied to the various funds based on the items. And so, you know, at this point, most of our Super Combos have obviously been sold for fiscal year 2007, but we haven't closed the year out yet. So we'll have $23.4 million of Super Combo revenue that will be allocated to those various stamp funds. So. Wanted to cover that because it is kind of a key element of the budget policy that will be approved tomorrow, or be up for action tomorrow. Next, we'll move on to the investment policy. And again, this policy has not changed since the prior year, but as the governing body of this department, you are required by statute to review this policy annually. So we do cover it. All funds administered by Texas Parks and Wildlife are required to be deposited in the state treasury
except for the four funds that are highlighted on this slide. While they're not required, all of the funds do reside in the state treasury except for Operation Game City. And those funds are invested in CDs and several separate bank accounts. All bank accounts must be authorized by delegated investment officers, and they must be properly collateralized, and there are also specific reporting requirements that are included in the policy. And that completes my presentation. Are there any other questions?
I have one question. This is all the way back from the first, I think it's the first slide. Let's see if I can do that. It's the State Park Receipt.
What?
State Park Receipt. Grab that one right there. And the entrance number is down slightly?
It is down slightly. The park pass sales are up. So I think there could be a little bit of a correlation there. We are studying it right now. And it's a minimal amount of entrance fees that are down.
Do you think there's a weather tie on that? Okay.
Mark, also, the Commissioner, part of the issue at the parks has been the systems.
Right.
We have multiple systems. To be fair to the legislation, one of the reasons they asked us to add more auditors was to try to get more consistency within the system.
Right.
And one of them was entrance fees.
Right.
And how we're counting people. So these are some of the things we'll be looking at and we'll be in the middle of trying to figure out, you know, how we do that. How should we charge? And we got into some of the issues just to give one example. I won't spend all time on this, but you know, how do you charge a school bus of kids? How do you count them? You know, what should we do or not do? And so we've been asked to look at all of that, and that's part of what we will be doing going forward. Yes, sir. Welcome on.
Sure. Well, Dabney, State Parks Director, just a quick clarification. I'm amazed that we're not down further in entrance fees. I mean, it rained us out completely spring break. It snowed and sleeted us out Easter. It flooded us out 4th of July. We've got three or four parks still flooded out completely. And it has just been nonstop raining. If it ever quits raining, I mean, or it's more spaced out. The lakes are full. The rivers are beautiful. I mean, we're going to jump up. I mean, I think Mary and I were both astounded that we're not just completely in a hole.
Right.
Because the weather has been amazing. In places that have been last year in a complete drought. So I think that we're really going to go to town when we get a little break in this weather or more predictable.
I will say Caldera Canyon's attendance numbers as of August 1 have already matched their full year last year. So the parts of the state that
are beautiful. You don't get caught in the rain. It's
right. Yeah.
Just love
you don't want to be down in
the state as beautiful as it's been here.
Annual pass sales were down until just recently, and now they've exceeded. And that's corresponding to the weather as well.
One of our directives is that we don't complain about rain in Texas.
No, we're not. No, for sure.
We're not.
No, we're not.
Good.
Right. Walter, if you could, I can ask the question, right? I think discuss the railroad real quick, where we are and what we need to do relative to washouts and the other issues that let's do. Commissioners need to know kind of where we stand on the road.
I think Steve Wilson maybe could give you more specific details, but I think we've about got the fix worked out. We've got a good engineering estimate of what it's going to cost to fix and a mechanism in place to transfer that money to fix not only the washout and get the track back in order to fix the one railroad car that was damaged in the derailment. And if you need to know the specifics, I'd have Scott or Steve.
Are we on track? Then
we're going to get fixed.
Or at the time.
We are on track.
September 1 is coming on my date.
We are out of it September 1. It won't be, it can't possibly be fixed by September 1, but it'll be fixed as quickly as possible.
By the statute, by the legislation, you know, technically we are out of it. But we're going to continue to work with both groups, the local group and the group that they're working to contract with to get it back in operation and get it in good shape. We're coordinating with them almost, I'd say, daily between Walt and Scott and Steve and Ann Bright. working with their contracting people, with their attorneys, with their repair people. Technically, it goes off our books September 1. But we are not, just like the THC transfer, there are some little hiccups in there that we're going to help work through all of those issues.
Right. Oh, well, it won't be called train wreck holes here. Sort it out here.
We're never going to get out from
here. Please, Mark. This is the right thing to do for the group up there. They have been a wonderful group. And then they contracted with a private organization that operates these type of railroads throughout the nation. And the key was, you know, getting through the problems we've had with weather washouts and had the tube crash. I'm hoping we're still tracking some like hell. So that's just for me. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
This is where I'll work. Right, any other discussion with our commission? Any questions? Let me see, if there are no other further questions, I will place this item on the Thursday Commission meeting agenda for public comment and action. We're at committee item number 4, equipment and maintenance provider review system rule, and Ms. Ann Bright will make the presentation.
Thank you, Mary's blessing. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Ann Bright, General Counsel. I'm going to talk to you about the Maintenance and Provider Review and Equipment Review System. House Bill 12 is a bill that you're going to hear a lot about over the next few months. This was an omnibus bill that came out towards the end of the session, and it affected not only state parks, it affected a lot of the agency. This is the bill that transfers the historic sites, and there's just a lot in this. One of the things it does is it requires that the agency establish by rule an equipment review system and a maintenance provider review system. The equipment review system is intended to basically require the department to sell equipment that is no longer usable. And it applies to maintenance equipment, and maintenance equipment is actually defined pretty broadly as equipment that is used to administer, operate, preserve, repair, expand, or otherwise maintain real property, including improvements and fixtures owned or operated by the department. What this requires is that annually the agency must determine if maintenance equipment has become outdated and then sell the outdated equipment in surplus. I think you probably saw back during Walt Dabney's presentation that he's done several times about the state park system. You saw a lot of equipment in there that was being held together with duct tape. And I think the idea is for us to get rid of that equipment. I've already talked about the definition of maintenance equipment. Under the statute, the commission is required to establish by rule a review system that determines when equipment has become outdated, and then to sell the outdated equipment. Part of the process of determining when equipment is become outdated is really determining which equipment this is going to apply to. We're recommending that the proposed rules apply to capitalized equipment, and that's equipment having an acquisition value of $5,000 or more. The reason for that is that there are limits on we have limited funds to purchase capitalized equipment. We have a lot more flexibility with equipment that is lower in value, which means that if it breaks, it's a little bit easier for us to go out and either fix it or replace it. Under the proposed rules, maintenance equipment will be considered outdated if it meets any of the following three criteria. First, it is no longer operational and cannot reasonably be made operational. I think that's self-explanatory. Two, no longer serves the department purpose. Again, I think that's self-explanatory. The third one is that it meets all of the three criteria, which is it has a fair market value that is less than the cost to maintain it. The cost to maintain it, or the cost to replace it, is less than the annual maintenance cost, and we have sufficient funds and capital budget authority. Basically,
well, we may not have any equipment left.
Third one is the big
one. The tractor with the duct tape may be gone. That may be the last tractor.
And part of the reason for the second two is that a lot of times it may actually cost more to repair, for example, a vehicle, but it's going to cost a lot more to replace it.
and capital budget, and we need, and so we've got to make sure that we're going to be able to replace it.
And we have evaluated about this where Walt took in the park side has been a real issue. The trucks have been driving the hand-me-downs from the game warden, so you imagine what kind of shape they're on to get there.
Right.
We've had the point where we're literally replacing transmissions and engines and trucks that were that's working over the truck.
Yeah.
But and we were able to explain that to legislation, so you know we've got some real help this last round. And I know I keep emphasizing that, but I do want to make sure, as you're talking to your local legislators and people that you deal with throughout the state, as commissioners, please thank them. I mean, we got a lot. It was a battle, as it should be, and we've got to prove every point, but they really did come through, and it's going to be a big help for us. And the key now is to use that wisely over the next 2 years, create momentum so that we can go back to them, show them what we've done, so that we can then keep that level and raise that, and continue to raise the level of being able to serve our constituents.
This is kind of one of those, some people would look at this proposal, this set of issues here as being bureaucratic, redundant, whatever. But what Ann and Walt, the staff, tried to do here was incorporate a real common sense set of criteria here that you have seen, and be practical about it, and yet be sure that we comply with the directions that were given.
One thing I should point out, although State Parks is probably going to be the most impacted by this requirement, by these rules, this will apply across the agency, so it's going to apply to other areas of the agency as well.
Check boats, too? Like saltwater boats?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's around $5,000.
Anything and everything.
We've been rebuilding those boats.
Yes.
That's right. Since about 1890.
Those are.
Under the...
One question. When we sell this, who gets the money?
We get the money.
We do?
Yes, sir.
Doesn't go into the...
It's going to go into some grand pot. I don't know that it's appropriated back.
It goes into the state treasury.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not necessarily immediately available for us to use. No.
It then has to be appropriated.
Appropriated, right.
Which would be... Yes.
So, I mean, will it be a... Will it be a labeled total there in the state treasury?
Marriott,
this is ours. You better give it back to us.
Let's get Marriott and give us the facts. So we.
I'd like to just clarify. When we do sell surplus property, it does come back to the agency in the form of an appropriated receipt.
Oh.
And so we do have to spend those funds within the year that we sold the equipment.
But there are hours. There's no rhubarb about whose it is, the money.
No.
Okay.
Correct.
And it's appropriated already.
It comes in as an appropriated receipt, so it comes with the funds and employees. It does not. That's correct. You have to spend it in the year.
You can't find it in that year. You can't roll it over.
How is it sold?
Right.
What's the process of the sale of it?
Well, there's several rules relating to surplus property, and they are open to nonprofit organizations, and we post the property out on the website. I'm not probably the best to speak specifically to the sale, but there are various regulations that we do follow.
There are folks here in the audience can help us out, but basically it is posted. All the agencies do that. Here's stuff that is surplus that is going to be sold. You can view it at this location, at this site, decision date at some point. I mean, you know, the what it's called, the General Services Administration used to handle a bunch of that, used to handle all of it. It kind of flips back and forth between, okay, no, it's you guys' responsibility. So it sits over here in our warehouse or possibly out in the regional office in that area where people can come look at the truck or the boat or the boat motor or the, you know, the whole area.
Mm-hmm.
But can we have
there
any,
are auctions, that's correct. Thank you, Steve.
Do we have any idea what the value, once we comply with this criteria, what is the value of property out there that we are going to sell? I mean, so what kind of value do we have out there? Do we know?
I
don't think it's going to be a real big number because it is so, a lot of it is going to be sold to scrap.
Right.
A lot of it they'll part out, you know, that some of the vehicles and stuff they'll part out. But I think a lot of that stuff is going to be that's sold as scrap.
Just as I can't give you a total for the agency, but the amounts are fairly minimal. I mean, boats are sold for $1,000.
Yeah.
You know, they have that. Yeah. Because so, yeah, they're pretty well used by the time we start collecting them.
One other thing I'll point out is as a result of this process, we will be able to give you a specific answer to that question. We'll know how much we're selling under this process. Also, we're going to prepare the rules require, the proposed rules we're recommending will require an annual report regarding this equipment. And then within 60 days after completion of the report, staff would begin the process of disposing of the property. The other thing I should point out is that these rules are intended to address situations in which the department is mandated to dispose of property. We surplus property every day, maybe not every day, but we do surplus it regularly, and so that process would continue to go forward. The other part of HB 12 that we're talking about this morning concerns maintenance provider review system. And this really concerns maintenance tasks. And those are defined as administration, operation, preservation, repair, and expansion of personal property owned by the department and real property owned or operated by the department. And what this proposal will require that the department analyze whether there are certain maintenance tasks that could be better performed by a third party rather than doing it with our employees. Under the proposed rules, each facility will annually identify the cost of staff to perform specified maintenance tasks for that facility. For example, custodial work, mowing and landscaping, trash collection. I should point out that we have some facilities where we already outsource these services. And a lot of times those are going to be a small percentage of somebody's salary. You may have someone who does the park ranger, but they may also clean the restrooms. We're going to be working on the methodology to get that information. The report will also annually identify the cost of contracting with a third party to perform those tasks. So each facility manager will identify what it would cost, and we would also include our contract management costs. Whenever we contract with somebody, we also have to have somebody that tells the contractor what to do and what we're expecting. And then the last part of that analysis is whether the quality of the result is going to be equal to or better than the quality of the task performed by staff. For example, Walt was telling me that at Garner State Park over the summer, we have a group that cleans the restroom. That's all they do. They go around and clean each restroom, and then they start all over again. If we have someone that's just going to come in once a week, the quality is obviously not going to be the quality of what we're getting now. Under the proposed rules, staff will begin the process of contracting with the third party to perform these tasks if the cost of contracting is less than the cost of staff to perform it and the quality of the result is believed to be better than or equal to the task performed by staff. And staff recommends that these rules be authorized for publication in the Texas Register, and then we'll come back to you in November after receiving comments for adoption. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any discussion? Any questions? And back here.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions or discussion, I will ask staff to publish this item in the Texas Register for the required comment period. Committee item number 5, vessel regulations. Mr. Al Campos, make a question.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. Mr. Cook, good morning. I'm Alfonso Campos, Chief of Marine Enforcement. House Bill 3764 added something that was not available to marine dealers. We're basically talking about boat dealers and boat manufacturers, including boat distributors. They could not display their product out on the water by using their marine license in recreational settings and in contests or events, namely fishing tournaments. So that was a restriction that had been in since about 2001. So House Bill 3764 expands the use of inventory boats for legitimate business practices, expanded now to include recreational use. and also use in participation in contests or events, like I said, the fishing tournaments. Now, the traditional use will still be allowed. Traditional use meaning we can go show, or the dealer can show a boat to a prospective client by using the marine license. But if they want to use it in other situations, then they'll have to issue, or they'll have to have a validation card and a decal. It's basically going to be a permit system from the department. The expanded use is limited because the manufacturers and the boating industry, the dealers, they wanted some control. So it's limited. It's limited to no more than 6 consecutive days or 12 days in any one month for a boat or a vessel. For one boat, correct. Now that permit can be used on a number of boats, but the industry did not want this abused to be used on one vessel for an entire 1 year or 2 year period. So they wanted some type of limitations, or they asked for some type of limitations. The validation card and decals on the boat are going to be required, and each use of the card and decals, it must be noted on a log that's maintained at the business, at the dealership, and that has to be available for inspection. And the decals I'm talking about are the basic boat decals that you have. Traditionally, on the marine licensees, they did not have to have the validation decals, but now if they use them for recreational purposes or for fishing tournaments, they will be required that. Now, one validation card and decal set is issued to each licensee at no charge, but additional sets are available at $120 each, and that's a program that we will be implementing beginning September 1. We did have some comments, but basically in summary, it was 17 comments, 13 agreed, and 4 disagreed. And I'll be happy to address any questions that you might have about the program.
Let me ask you this, so you can buy additional details for $120. Now, you can move those to various boats that they usually can use.
Correct. They can be used from boat to boat.
Okay, so you can just transfer. Okay.
Yeah, they can either be put permanently if you're just going to use them on one boat, or they can be on a placard.
Oh, okay.
They can be displayed in one boat 1 week and another boat the next week.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Was this something the boat industry wanted, or was it driven by the legislature or by the boat industry?
Both.
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, traditionally it was very restrictive. They wanted to use it, especially in the fishing tournaments, because they feel like this is an area where they can display their products.
Okay. Any questions or discussion? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions or discussion, I'll place this item on the Thursday Commission meeting agenda for public comment and action. Committee item number 5, implementation of recommendations by the State Auditor's Office, audit of the State Parks Financial Processes. Scott Boroff.
For the record again, Chairman and Commissioners, my name is Scott Boroff, Deputy Executive Director of Operations. I'm here today to do two things. For the benefit of the new commissioners, I want to go over the broad picture of the audit, where we are. Secondarily, and very important, is there were some specific recommendations related to commission actions and commission input that I'm going to be seeking input and action tomorrow. To start with, as background, last November, State Auditor's Office came in during the pre-legislative process as we were trying to gear up to ask for more money for state parks, and did an audit of the state parks divisions and related support activities that go on. That report was issued in March of this year, so it was about a 5-month process, pretty intensive, both reviewing some of our processes here in headquarters as well as out in the field. The report that came out was broken into 4 broad categories, which resulted in 48 specific recommendations. And the broad categories were visitation and potential new revenue. In other words, there was recommendations that we should do a better job of counting our visitors in our state parks, and we should look for ways to increase revenue. That was the first broad category. The second category was management activities in the state parks division. The third broad category was the way we prioritize capital repairs and estimate those repairs. We should seek ways to enhance that process. And most importantly, the fourth broad category was financial controls. Financial controls in particular had already been identified by our own internal audit group about 6 or 8 months prior to the beginning of the state auditor's office. And I will tell you that the majority of those 48 recommendations were not a surprise to us. Most of the recommendations that came out, we were aware of some deficiencies we had. They were, to some extent, related to the lack of funding that we had in order to get people in to do those jobs. But we take the recommendations extremely seriously. In addition to the 48 specific recommendations in the audit report, there were 5 audit-related riders that Ms. Fields referenced in her presentation earlier. We internally decided to add those 5 rider issues to the reporting process. We are required to report several times on our actions to address the recommendations. So we have 48 rider recommendations and 5 rider recommendations that we are tracking in our reporting process. We were required on July the 1st to present the first report to the State Auditor's Office, to the Legislative Budget Board, and to the Governor's Office. We did that. That was our comprehensive implementation plan, how we were going to address each of the recommendations, as well as the deliverables. I will tell you that we have put an extraordinary amount of time into this. It's been a huge effort. Thousands and thousands and thousands of man hours have gone into this over the last 4 months. The documents that we sent out on July the 1st included a whole set of deliverables. We took each recommendation and broke it down into specific deliverables and due dates and responsible parties. We are on target. We did get an acknowledgement from the auditor's office subsequent to the first report on July the 1st that it was acceptable, that the methodology we were using was on track, and so we are moving forward. Our second big deliverable is a report that is due on or before August the 31st to update the auditor's office and the LDB and the governor's office on progress. We have that report ready to go. Pending your approval tomorrow of 2 or 3 items that I'm going to go over here in a minute, we will submit that report tomorrow, a week early. We have another major deliverable at the end of September related to our capital projects that we are on track for. We have contracted with a private vendor to do a study related to potential revenue impacts to capital construction projects that will be completed early next year. So we're well on our way. We will continue to put a lot of effort into this. This has been, from the Commission and Mr. Cook's directive, the primary focus of the agency over the last few months, so we can get ahead of the curve here. I want to particularly recognize all the staff. I couldn't even begin to name them here. This has been a huge effort. All Gene's people and my folks and all these divisions have put in a lot of time in getting this thing done and done correctly. We do believe this is going to help us do our business better out there in the field. As I said, the financial controls issue is one that I think is a particular concern both to our oversight agencies and to us, and we're pretty excited about the potential for us in the next few months to have taken care of that. We are on a parallel track there. We have developed and implemented, in fact, this week we are in the process of training the field staff in a whole suite of financial control policies and procedures and methodologies that will allow us to have tight fiscal control at the park level all the way up to the headquarters level, and working with Ms. Fields and her staff and the administrative resource division. We have, for example, created an entire new shop in administrative resources that will be monitoring and evaluating, analyzing, and making sure we're doing this right. It's called State Park Revenue Branch. I believe it has 11 folks assigned to it, 11 FTEs, just with the job of overseeing the financial resources and the financial processes in state parks. Having said that, there are a handful of recommendations
specific to the commission, and I would move into those. In order to implement, one of the recommendations by the auditor's office is to seek that the commission would direct the staff to seek input from legislative oversight committees and local communities to maintain a state park system that has statewide merit and serves our mission and goals. I will tell you that this is something that we have been doing for a long time. We pretty regularly seek input from both our oversight committees and local communities. We, back in 2001, went through a statewide strategic planning process that resulted in a revision to the land and water plan. We held focus groups all across the state. We talked to all of our constituents in many different forms and formats, and we also talked with our legislative oversight communities. I think the concern here is there was no documented directive from the commission to continue that or to make sure that we do that in the future. So one of the things that we are going to ask you tomorrow is to endorse a resolution that would direct us to continue those kinds of activities as we go forward in any planning processes related to state parks. The second action item that we would like to see tomorrow is relative to a recommendation that says that we should seek the commission's approval for prioritized criteria for capital improvements and repair needs. I will share with you that we have had a criteria for 6 years that we developed back in 2000 that pretty much reflects what you're going to see here today and tomorrow. Some slight changes in the language. There's been a lot of time and effort put into it. It looks pretty simple and straightforward. It's not been quite as simple and straightforward to arrive at the final conclusion. Once again, this is something that I believe we've been doing. It's just not something that the commission has documented as a directive to the staff, nor have you formally approved these criteria. The four criteria that you see on the screen before you are health and safety. This has been an interesting debate for us. First of all, these are criteria for planned projects, and I want to make that clear. What you don't see on this list is emergency repairs. We don't, you know, emergencies happen. They're not something we plan. So emergency repairs are something that we are going to do. And the question has come up relative to health and human safety. If there's some emergency that puts people at risk for imminent danger or some kind of injury, we see that as an emergency repair. And we're either going to close the facility or we're going to fix it right away, and we're not going to put people in harm's way. And that is our first priority out there, is the safety of our folks that are coming to enjoy our facilities. So when we say health and safety, the definition that we are using is projects necessary to prevent hazardous conditions that might occur if they go unaddressed. And so those are the highest priority things. For example, leaky roofs. Well, a leaky roof isn't necessarily a health and safety issue unless it's been leaking for a couple of years and the rafters are rotten and the ceiling's fixing to fall on people. So those kinds of potential health and safety issues, we think, are the first criteria for us to target planned repairs. That does not imply that we have open facilities out there that are a health and safety risk for our customers. Those are emergencies. The second one, criteria that we propose that you endorse would be regulatory issues. And those are, for example, ADA requires us to have accessible facilities as we do construction. The state also has certain requirements for us. Obviously, we need to comply with whatever state and federal regulations are out there. The third criteria that we're looking at, we have decided to call business continuity. And that is those repairs that, if they go unrepaired, would affect our visitation and revenue. If you don't repair restrooms, it might not necessarily be a health and safety issue, but if they're so bad off that folks stop coming, it is going to impact your revenue and visitation. So those kind of business continuity issues, we think, are the third most important criteria after health and safety and regulatory issues. And last, and certainly not least, our mission support projects, and those are projects to support our mission to provide cultural and recreational outdoor opportunities. So those things are important to us. We think they should be included in the criteria. These are the four that we are going to ask you to support tomorrow. Another recommendation which does not require commission action is a recommendation by the SAO to seek input from the commission
on several policy-related issues that we are going to propose. I'm going to go over those one by one here. These are issues that ultimately would be policy issues that are directed by the executive director, but pursuant to the recommendation, we would like to have input from the commission as to your consideration for those proposed changes to policy. The first set of those are relative to closures. And this is for parks that we would make the decisions to close, to stop operating. First of all, the new policy would require that we have public hearings before we close those. That was one of the recommendations of SAO. The second recommendation was that 6 months' notice to the Legislative Budget Board and the Governor's Office be provided prior to those closures. And the third recommendation was that at least 2 hearings before the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission before a closure. Now, I didn't bring the specific language, but I want to let you know that we tried to, as Mr. Cook always directs us, to be practical as well as appropriate here. Obviously, if we have an act of God, if a tornado hits a facility, it isn't practical to go 6 months out and ask, to tell the governor we're going to close down in 6 months, or the LBB. If, a flood washes out our facility somewhere, we have to close the front door because people are going to get hurt. So what we are going to write into the policy are some exceptions. We do believe it's appropriate if it's a planned closure, if we just decide it's not appropriate for a park to be in the system anymore. We think we can do that in a planful way. We think it is reasonable to give 6 months' notice, and it is reasonable to have 2 commission meetings and have the public give the input. But if it's an emergency, if there's some crisis that's looming, we think the commission should have the opportunity to do what's necessary to protect the public and the assets of the agency. So that would be wrapped into the language of the policy.
What do you, Commissioner, especially, I point out, we have to close the department. Mm-hmm. We only did close the department. Mm-hmm. But for whatever set of reasons in the process, the legislative process this time, this one came up, that if you're going to consider a real closure, shutting down business, closing the door, walking away, or whatever it is, that we go through this process. We think that's appropriate. We've got some parks closed right now. We closed them, a month ago because they're still standing in water. Mother, for example. And Abilene right now, we've got parks that as Scott explained, the exceptions, but this is something that I think is appropriate, that if the agency ever is going to really say, you're going to close this site, that we go through quite a process, public process, to be sure that that's out there and understood.
The second recommendation, subcomponent of that particular recommendation from the auditor's office, was relative to transfers, and that is any planned facility transfers would require the submittal and approval of a management operating plan from the receiving entity. So if we were going to transfer a park to the city of Houston, as we did last year, we would require in advance a management plan and an operating plan from that entity before we would make the transfer. Once again, this piece, as well as the prior pieces, would be wrapped into our land transaction conservation policy. And for the new commissioners, I'll just let you know, last year we updated this policy to include several of the things you already see here. For example, if we propose a sale or a transfer of a state park in any form, not just total closure, we require coming back to the commission in two separate meetings and talking to you. We do require public hearings before that would happen. So a lot of these things we already do. We just wanted to follow the intent of the recommendation and give you an opportunity to give us input before we tweak this policy one more time. Let me finish up. The motions that you would see tomorrow would be the two motions. First would be to adopt the resolution that would direct staff to seek input from legislative oversight committees and the public as we go through any kind of planning process. Second would be, for tomorrow, would be to adopt the resolution for prioritized criteria for capital improvements. So those are the two that you would see tomorrow. So I'm asking you for two things today. I'm asking you for some input on our policy changes, and I'm asking for direction to go forward with those action items tomorrow.
be glad to answer questions. Any questions or comments? It's pretty thorough, Scott.
Oh, yeah, they are.
And I think it fits directly with what the legislature is asking us to do.
That's our duty.
I think Scott and his group have done a great job, so I really appreciate it, because it has been tremendous effort behind the scenes to get all this done in a very short period of time.
Just so you know, we are going to be briefing the commission at each commission meeting for the next 2 years on our progress relative to the state auditor's office.
Of course, this is right at the top of the priority list relative to what we need to do and going forward as we get through this biennium.
And obviously, we recognize the importance and the seriousness and take to heart.
We are.
We have dealt with it in an appropriate manner.
Yeah, I think class example has got his group have done a tremendous job. I was shocked the other day I came in today and they already hired 14 assistant auditors for that we have been required. Yeah. Say in private sector, I don't know if we could have gotten that done that quickly. Yeah. And found good people with would be the right term, lots of background experience. So not real narrow auditors, but because we're gonna ask them to help us not only on the financial side but on the operational side working as well as inside the group. Relative to the bar. So those are the kind of things that they move very quickly.
Have we given a preview of this to the LDB and the Lieutenant Governor's Office and the Governor's Office?
Yes, sir. We not only have submitted our reports on time, which is our formal recognition and preview. Mr. McCarty, for example, I think has met with the LDB on several components of this recently. Our intent, we have met with the State Auditor's Office on two or three occasions where we've had them come in and verify that what we're doing is appropriate. Our intent is to continue periodic meetings with the Auditor's Office and the LDB and the Governor's Office as we move down the road, because we want to do this right. We want to be responsive. And we, although it's a lot of work, I think we recognize this is going to make us a better outfit at what we're doing. So we're committed to this.
Okay. Mr. Parker, I want to say to you, too, that those officers have been responsive. We've made some calls and said, hey, guys, come out, sit down, and look at where we're headed, look at what we're doing, and tell us if you think we're on track or, if you've got some gestures and folks are doing that routinely. And I appreciate that from them. I see in the audience that we have Tina back in the audience today. And Tina attends most of our meetings, and we welcome her and appreciate the participation in this process.
Ms. Beck is from the LDB, our analyst with the Legislative Budget Board, of course, closely with us. I will say that, for example, starting today, State Parks is having four training sessions over the next 4 weeks where we will put some 250 to 300 folks through this financial control training. And that's a collaborative process. It's being led by the team that's headed up by this new financial control branch and administrative resources, but it's a very collaborative effort. We, for the last 4 months since we got this report, have basically had most of Walt's senior field staff in Austin helping us work closely with administrative resources to get this training put together and figure out how we're going to get these financial controls accomplished quickly.
And this is where those financial controls will go on the ground at the park in the little booth where the people drive up to and pay their fee or check themselves into a cabin or a shelter or whatever it is. It is where that actually will go on the ground. So this training program that we're going into is critical, but it's where it's actually going to happen.
I will share with you that this is a lot of work, there's a lot of forms, there's a lot of processes that the state park staff are going to have to learn and accomplish. We are on parallel track to try to find, for the next legislative session, an automated way to do what we're going to be doing manually in the interim. And so we are aggressively working through our information technology and AR and state parks groups to find a vendor that can automate all these processes that are going to be manual in the interim. And that's going to be important for us. It's going to be a strong focus of the SAO team over the next year and a half.
Mr. Chairman, how do we, you brought up the example of a school bus full of kids, is it more important to charge them a fee or to, for the educational purposes allow access to the park? How are we going to have a set of uniform guidelines or rules throughout our whole park system that are going to give our people guidance on how to deal with these issues.
Absolutely. As I reported, the first set of recommendations was exactly those questions. Visitation, how are you going to count folks? How are you going to apply consistent methodologies across the whole park? So the answer is yes. We are right now developing those policies. There will be some consistency. There will be some guidelines. There will be some flexibility. I mean, one of the important things is to allow folks to be able to accommodate unique situations. I think the problem that was identified in the FAO, which we already knew we had, was there were too much flexibility. There were too many opportunities out there. So discounting is one of the things that one of the recommendations in particular. How do you establish appropriate discounts? Because you may want to discount children that are coming in order to meet the mission. One of the problems we had was because we had such a cobbled infrastructure out there, for example. I mean, we had, I think, 5 different kinds of car counters. One of the things you do is you count cars that come in after hours. We had all these different kinds of technology, some of it not very good at all. We have all kinds of different computers out in the field. The division has not been able to upgrade its technology, so a lot of the computers are using in the field are old 286 computers from when we were kids, basically. So one of the things we're going to be doing is some of them. You know, as we get new technology, for example, I think just last week we got in all of our new car counters, so every park that has the same kind of car counter will be able to use that technology to get consistent information. Every park will have a set of strict guidelines about how they can discount and how it has to be authorized, who authorizes it, how that information gets reported. So the answer is absolutely.
Can we publish these new guidelines on the website so that groups will know what they are prior to coming through the gate and not be disappointed? Or
good idea.
I think that's a good idea.
We'll certainly
structure their day to accommodate our guidelines.
We will pursue that.
I mean, obviously there's some special situations that you can't address, but I think just as a standard procedure issue, it would be great to have it out there.
That's a good point.
True. Walt Devin, State Parks Director. Most of these school groups, Commissioner, don't just show up at the gate. We know they're coming, and any organized group will do that. But putting it on the web, we definitely will have that there. Our biggest problem with these discounts and so forth is we did not document clearly enough why the discount was given, and the new systems in place will absolutely say what it is and give you a range down to zero.
Right.
But I think this commission still wants to make sure these kids don't get turned away because the financial problems of coming into the park preclude them from coming in. But we will document why we gave that zero entrance.
It's standardized throughout the whole
system. It is.
Well, that could be the goal. The training and the training's got to get down to the level.
Once we get it in,
standing in that booth. Yeah.
Correct. The reality is documentation was a huge piece of the recommendations that we got. A lot of the things we were doing, and I think we were doing appropriately, but when you're short-staffed and you don't have any equipment, I mean, sometimes your priority is to get those restrooms cleaned and those lawns mowed, and you don't fill out the pieces of paper appropriately. But we're going to fix that. We are going to fill out the documentation appropriately, and we are going to standardize the way we do business across the state park system.
I remember a lot of our parks have been in the last few years, particularly, we provide more and more volunteer help and that kind of thing. And so, you know, there's going to be a difference of standards there, too.
And the FDA will help that, yeah, absolutely.
Commissioners, before we leave this one, and obviously, tremendous amount of work going on, and I was kind of looking around at the audience to see one of the groups that the Waltz folks that has put a tremendous amount of effort in this project from day one, and that I thought that we all thought was essential to make the connection is the regional directors in the State Parks Division. And I'm going to tell you, you got 8 people out there, 8 men and women out there, who have a huge responsibility. Most of them have somewhere around 12 to 15 parks in their region that they work on a day-to-day basis. But they have farmed out a lot of that duty back to their helpers or their, some of their lead park managers and have been here working from day one, not just since we got the audit report, but during the SAO visit and working with those listening, hearing the concerns, understanding the significance of the concern and the importance of solving them. Now they're in the solution process and the application of putting it on the ground. And I encourage each of you to get to know the State Park Regional Director in your office. And Ellen Buchanan, I know that Commissioner Parker has worked with Ellen on several occasions on the railroad and some other issues. Randy Bell up in Waco, Brent Leisure, Larry Fowler up at the Panhandle. Great group, and they're doing us a great job. They're not here today because they're probably out there digging and shoveling, but that's part of it. And they've done us a great job, and I want to recognize them. They're essential in this process.
Good point.
Would you direct us to put our two items on tomorrow?
Yes, with the other questions or comments. Scott, great No, Scott's done a wonderful job because, I just ended around what you first or so. So all of them, we've had very specific time, and at the same time, I want to do the right thing by what SAO wanted, WD wanted, and everything from the forms and the process. And so I think we're on a great track. So anyway, here's Scott. Any other questions or comments for Scott?
I was just at the moment that if the agency didn't wait on legislation to see if the other without the
shutdown, well, actually, prior to that, you know, but we only had the specifics as of March, so since then we've been full bore.
I've been the good days, alternative, humble approach. You know, I've been a nation back at a resource as well, but say, okay, this is what we're
going to do. Yeah, well, good point. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay. I will place this item on the Thursday Commission meeting agenda for public comment and action. Thank you, Scott. Number seven, item seven, duck stamp fees. Tom Newton.
Good morning. I'm Tom Newton. I'm the license manager.
Good, Tom.
The legislation is authorized by SB 1668 for us to implement an electronic duck stamp. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service recently implemented a program for state agencies such as Texas Parks and Wildlife to issue the federal duck stamp electronically. Texas is one of nine pilot states, which includes other states such as Arkansas, Florida, New York, Colorado, and others. The electronic stamp will be available initially at TPW headquarters, law enforcement offices, state parks, internet, and call center. It's a total of about 109 different outlets. The changes that we'll realize for license year 2008, there will be a $2 increase in the price of the stamp from $15 to $17. This will cover the cost of fulfillment and any transaction fees. It's pretty much a total pass-through for us. The customer will be issued a document along with his license if he buys it in conjunction with the Super Combo that will have a validity date on it for 45 days. During these 45 days, Amplex, who is the fulfilling entity, Amplex Corporation, will fulfill the duck stamp within 2 to 3 weeks, and that will come by mail. And once the when the license holder receives this stamp, he can pitch the document. It's no longer valid. For future availability, so this year is a pilot year for us. Next year, things go as planned, we'll roll the electronic duck stamps out to the rest of our retail outlets. This would be a total of over 1,600 different sales outlets throughout the state of Texas. Under comments that we've received, we had 15 respondents agreed, citing increased availability that this will bring. five respondents disagreed with the resolution saying the cost increase. The benefit for the Fed is they'll establish a central distribution point and be able to have tighter inventory controls. All the stamps will be in one location versus thousands of locations around the state and the nation. The benefit for us is, of course, we'll increase sales outlets also for the Dutch stamp, and which will eliminate shortages that have occurred in the past at your local post offices or you know, wherever that have a fixed number of stamps, physical inventory. And the recommendation tomorrow will be to about this.
Okay. Any questions or comments?
Just a quick on the retail outlet availability. That's a certainty. Or they're waiting on the results of this year, the pilot program. I mean, that is definitely going to happen in 2009.
The plan right now is that it will happen in 2009. We've got this year to work a few bugs out. We've got the document that I was telling you about is similar to the license, identical to the license, basically. It's going to be cumbersome to a lot of our constituents initially. Our plans are to use this year to perfect the system, move this document to, you know, just to occupy a tag up here. Not really a tag, mm-hmm. it won't function as a tag. It'll just have the federal buck stamp with the expiration up here. Get rid of this. So that's what we're going to be working on.
Some of the guys have done a great job. I see Vernon Bevel in the audience here, and Mr. Bevel will at your leisure, relay some of the 15, 20-year history behind this project. We didn't get exactly what we wanted this year, but we're going to continue to work on it and get there. And sometimes working with the folks that cooperatively we work so well with at U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service takes some time to get there. But I believe we are honestly going to get there to an east end on our federal
Thanks. Any other questions or comments for Tom?
Okay. Let's see. I will place this item on the Thursday Commission meeting agenda for public comment.
Thank you, Tom. Is there any other business to be brought before this committee?
No, sir. I believe that's it.
Okay. That was kind of a long one. Yeah,
Very good. Longer than regulation. That's unusual.
Yeah, any other discussions about finance committee or anything before we pass it on the regs?
Okay.
This committee is completed.